This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy from Armature, providing software solutions for conformity assessment, standards, and policy management. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk here with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Mark Ryland. He is the Public Sector Chief Solutions Architect with a well-known company called Amazon. He's with Amazon Web Services. Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Good morning, John. Great to be here.
Well, we're not going to talk about books. We're not going to go to Amazon.com and order any books like I did just last week. We're going to talk about something different. We'll talk about elasticity and talk about cloud and cloud computing and some of the successes that Amazon has had with listeners just like you, with federal agencies who've been trying to move to the cloud and maybe trying to scratch their head and try to figure out the best way to do it. So today we're going to talk about Amazon Web Services and moving to the cloud and a little about security and many, many different topics. But before we begin, many of our listeners are going, Mark Ryland, is that like Ryland Real Estate? Or well, how did he wind up with Amazon Web Services? Maybe you can tell us about your background a little bit, please, Mark.
Sure, John, I'd be happy to. I'm actually a lawyer by training, I must confess, but I haven't practiced law in a long time. 21 years ago, I entered the IT industry working for Microsoft back in 1991.
Wow, and, early days.
Yep, early days working in the federal team. I was a technical guy there in the sales org and was fun part of the revolution of the NT operating system, which we kind of knew at the time was going to change the world.
And when it first came out, people said, nothing there. NT, I remember.
Exactly, yeah. But I looked at it as saying, look, if you can provide the, workstation class operating system, a mini computer type operating system to the average user running on average hardware, then something's going to happen. And that was the way I saw it. And I was happy to be part of that early revolution.
You know, most people don't realize that Steve Van Roykel, he was the guy who, I think on his own, came up with Windows for Workgroups and just figured out how to do a much smaller version of networking. He has the roots in there too, doesn't he?
Yeah, that's right. Yep. A lot of interesting veterans came out of those early days at Microsoft. We were underdogs in all the markets that we were in. Lotus was dominating spreadsheets and WordPerfect, was dominating the word processor market and so forth.
You were the featherweight, and they were the heavyweights,
yep,
and they were
Novell
coming after
on
you.
The server. Remember Novell?
And it looks just web browsers. I mean, Netscape had 90% of the market, and you kind of showed up, and Microsoft did pretty well there. I mean, it's interesting how the battles have changed over the years.
Yeah.
So you were spent many years with wide range of positions with Microsoft, and now you're working with Amazon Web Services. How long?
One year.
Oh, good, good. That's good. So what's interesting is that many people don't realize that Amazon has been around since 1994, Amazon Web Services since 2002, 2006, they started doing storage, and they started off working with Microsoft in many different areas initially there, didn't they?
Yeah, that's right. We, right from the start, working with lots of different companies. EC2, our compute platform, which went into beta in 2006, initially launched with just Linux, but we quickly added the Windows operating system because obviously customers want to have access to both of those critical operating systems. And so now we're a major, major partner of Microsoft, running lots of Microsoft workloads on our cloud.
And really major, people don't realize this, but there's 300 agencies that use Amazon Web Services. There's 1,500 educational institutions. So it's really not, you're not the little guy anymore. You're getting to be a pretty well-known guy, aren't you?
Yeah, it's really been an exciting business. We have more than hundreds of thousands of customers, 190 countries, lots of public sector business, and really it's still early days. So we're looking forward to lots of exciting things in the future as well.
I casually name drop there, Steve, but there's a method to my madness. Steve Van Roykel, of course, promoting people to go cloud first, shared first. I mean, this is what they're trying to do, and it kind of fits in very well with what Amazon provides. And if Steve Van Roykel can talk about shared first, I think he may want to look at some services from Amazon, or I think he may want to encourage agencies to look what Amazon has to offer. Maybe you can talk about cloud first and shared first and where your company fits in, please, Mark.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we provide this very easy to use platform, pay as you go, use only what you need, elasticity, that is, you can scale up and down depending on your workloads. We had some early wins with recovery.gov, you may remember, which was an early Amazon and Microsoft win on the cloud. And since then, there's been, you know, hundreds more agencies that have gotten involved. And so there's, you know, simple, typical workloads we see move, web workloads move very easily to the cloud. We're seeing a lot of DR Coop scenarios. People want to use, provide a much better recovery time for sites and so forth. So the cloud can make a great platform for that. Dev and test is a great first workload. People move their entire development environments, and you can test at scale on the cloud, where you can't necessarily buy and provision, you know, a full test environment that's a full scale environment on premises. That's going to double your cost. But in the cloud, you can do things like that. So those, and big data, of course, you know, everybody's talking about big data, but the cloud is ideal for that workload, because you run a big cluster for 3 or 4 hours on an afternoon, and you shut it down when you're not using it. And so you get great efficiencies, and you can really do what I call experimental IT. You can try things, you can fail fast, you can do agility, not just at the software development level, but in terms of hardware. Whoever heard of agile hardware before, you know, but now you can do that in cloud. You can provision 100 machines, use them for a couple of days. If the project you're trying out doesn't work, you move on. It's a really powerful model.
I work for a small software company with about 15, 16 developers, and they use the phrase, fire this server up and we'll try it out.
Exactly.
And because we're so, we can really do things quickly, because, you know, a guy can stay late, fire up a server, test something out, and make progress that week.
Right.
Because we meet once a week and there has to be progress. And so I think what the larger organizations, whether it's the SEC or whether it's Commerce or whether it's Exxon, they're hamstrung with that kind of flexibility. And I think finally there are tools out there to allow organizations to be as flexible as the small companies.
Yeah, absolutely. The agility is probably the number one benefit. Quick access to resources, quicker time to mission. It's a huge benefit for our customers, and we see great uptake. And of course, the cloud first and share first policies don't hurt things. Everybody's looking for a way to do this and do it quickly and efficiently. And collaboration happens very naturally in the cloud. You know, we, for example, the NIH has their 1,000 genomes project hosted on the Amazon cloud, and that was an opportunity to get more than 200 terabytes of data out into a public forum where lots of scientific researchers would have quick access to the data, bring their compute loads to the cloud, access the data, and then move on, instead of having to ship around hard disks or do these crazy things with very large data sets. It's been a great win, and it's a great example of the power of the cloud.
You know, analogies are always tough in this business, but with 200 terabytes, analogy is kind of simple. That's 16 million file cabinets.
I mean, exactly.
That's incredible, you know?
Yeah, and what happens is this democratizes research, because, you know, maybe a few large, rich institutions could afford to have big storage systems and move all this data around. But there's a lot of smaller organizations where the burden of this type of cost and expense and capital investment is just not practical. Now they have access to the same kinds of resources that the more you know, wealthy institutions have. So it's great.
You know, I like the quote from Teresa Carlson, and she's quoted as saying that big data is an enabler, and you can use Amazon Web Services because large and small agencies can use big data productively. So it's not a matter of only the big guys can do it. Now, finally, you can put your toe in the water as easily as a large organization can.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and the cloud provides a full pipeline for data. We have an storage service called Simple Storage Service, S3, which is very foundational, inexpensive storage service for large amounts of data. You can process that with our Hadoop implementation, Elastic MapReduce. We have lots of different database offerings, stand up an Oracle or a MySQL database in a matter of a few mouse clicks. And then we have NoSQL databases as well, like DynamoDB, which allow you to scale to very, very high data rates for your big data problems.
I was just thinking, there's some listeners who may not be familiar with the terminology, and you talked about DR Coop. That sounds like a rapper or something. No, it's disaster recovery. I think DR Coop and Hadoop sound like a couple of rappers in the studio, but
yeah,
Hadoop's
they
got nothing to do with DR Coop, but maybe it has something to do with it. You know, Hadoop is a way to handle big data.
And, yes, exactly. Hadoop has become a very popular framework for parallel processing of large data sets. It's an open source project built cooperatively by Yahoo, Facebook, and a bunch of other web companies, but made available through the Apache open source organization to the world. And now it's becoming quite the rage in the corporate and government IT space as well.
And maybe federal agencies can look out to the West Coast and say, these competitors all got together and kind of try to share information in order to move the ball along so everyone's life would be easier. Well, yeah. Well, maybe federal agencies can maybe share information and cooperate in a collaborative manner. And I'm sure that's one of Steve Van Reichel's initiatives. And it was Vivek says, look, let's all act like adults here.
Right.
Let's, you know, we got these silos here. Let's let the little agencies use the same power that the big agencies can. And maybe we can come up with, hold us back here, maybe standards with with security and maybe standards for sharing information.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're seeing just a huge growth in the use of both open source technology, other types of technology, but the cloud provides a very natural platform for the collaboration that everybody's looking for.
Yeah, and it's not like you are competing against Hadoop. You are using Hadoop in order to make agencies more efficient. It's not a matter of brand A, brand B, but there's a lot of different brands that kind of cross over, organizations cross over and share information. It's a shock for people who've been around like me. I've been around since Ben Franklin, and I've seen things that organizations may not be as willing to share information as the Apache Foundation is doing with some of this open source information. So I'd like to name names here, but I think everyone listening knows about some of the battles and the fights with brand names in this industry. Let's take a break and come back. We'll talk more about specifics here and say, well, what about, how does the CDC use this Amazon Web Services? Tell us more about the NIH example and how they did that so quickly. That's really the good story, is that really 2 or 3 months they got up real fast. That's really interesting. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Mark Ryland, Public Sector Chief Solutions Architect, Amazon Web Services. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're in the studio with Mark Ryland, Public Sector Chief Solutions Architect, Amazon Web Services. We've been talking about elasticity and the cloud and Amazon, and we've in general talked about, the transition to the cloud and making things inexpensive and saving money and being flexible. But now some of my listeners are going, give me some specifics here. Mr. Ryland, can we have some specifics on that? Maybe a list of particulars here or something? And let's talk about some particulars here. How about NIH? In late December, they were asked to come up with a quickie website with all kinds of information, and normally this could have taken a year, but they did it fast, didn't they?
Yeah, maybe. I think you're referring to the NCATS website.
Yeah.
Yep. They had a new mission, a submission within the agency. They were tasked to, this new project, and they had to get something out there quickly. So working with one of our partners and using the flexibility and the agility of the cloud, they went from zero to full deployment, I think, in less than 2 months.
Yeah, I mean, did everyone hear that? Do you want to write that down?
Should I say it more slowly?
Yeah. I mean, I work for a small commercial company that our developers work all weekend long to push for a deadline, but 2 months, that's remarkable, I think.
Yeah, it's really exciting that people can move so quickly, and the cloud gives you that type of capability.
Now, this also complied with some of the security requirements. It was a low-level FISMA requirement, so there were medical issues here, and so it wasn't as tight and secure as other applications. But how many projects have taken 18 months and they haven't defined requirements and the requirements change and
exactly.
They start all over again? And I don't think this is an issue just in the federal government. There are commercial organizations that change requirements in the middle of projects too. But this is, I think it's a real good example of a real flexible response. Now,
There's another NIH example, if I can throw this in. CDC has something called BioSense. And BioSense was a project that was gathering data from state, local, and hospital officials to look for infectious disease trends and outbreaks. And the first version they launched as an on-premise system, and there was running out of steam, and it wasn't agile enough. So when they did the version 2, they came to our GovCloud, and they deployed very quickly, and it's been a big success. And that actually has an ATO, a FISMA moderate ATO for that system. So we're able to deploy those more sensitive workloads as well on the cloud.
It's difficult to generate information from 2,000 different health facilities, but that's what the BioSense 2.0 did. I mean, if you can imagine all these different facilities with some very controlling individuals, because a lot of this information, if it's released, there are legal liabilities involved with medical information. And so they've gotten together and have public health information from all these wide range of organizations. And at the next level up, the moderate level from FISMA, which is like, when you watch the Olympic dive team, oh, degree of difficulty, 8.7.
Yeah,
moving
exactly.
Up in the degree of difficulty. It's not 9.9, but it's still, that's a reasonable amount of security to be responsible for.
Absolutely, yeah. And we have a number of workloads that have been certified by security officers at the moderate level, and lots more projects in the works.
Let's talk about Teresa Carlson and big data as an enabler. So the cloud's really changed with big data and large data sets. Volume is high, changing quickly. So how does this integrate with the cloud? Does this allow organizations, small agencies, to take advantage of larger data sets, or how does that all work with GovCloud?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the great things about the cloud is you're only paying for the storage that you actually consume. So you don't have to go pay for a large fixed cost storage device, but in order to begin to use large data sets, you can simply begin to accumulate the data. There's a ton of new data coming into systems, whether it's from web clicks or sensors. You know, our highway officials have a huge amount of now automation and sensor data coming out of the highway system. There's all kinds of sensors, you know, in lots of different customer bases and many, many sources of data. Now, typically, what do we do with all this data? We either buy, you know, a bunch of expensive equipment in anticipation of storing it, or you throw it away. And in the cloud, you can actually begin to accumulate this, pay literally, you know, byte for byte what you're using, not a penny more on a day-to-day basis. And now, you, on the basis of that data that you're storing, you can begin to do the processing and the analytics using some of these modern tools like the Hadoop framework we mentioned before. Parallel processing, take 100 or 200, you know, relatively powerful computers and churn through data way more quickly. NASA JPL, for example, had an analytics project that was taking them 15 days in the on-premises pipeline. They move that to the cloud. It takes 5 hours now to do the same amount of processing because they can deploy lots of servers, run the jobs, shut them down, and not pay for them when they're not using them.
I was just thinking, when I was in graduate school, you know, during the Civil War, we would sit in seminars for 2 hours and argue about books verbally back and forth. And I would not have an idea what my opponent's position was until the day of that class. I'm teaching a class on Thursday night, and guess what? We are discussing things on LinkedIn and a forum going back and forth. So we're going to discuss things, and people are going to know the other's positions before they start. And it really allows people to have a more accurate position on what they take. And we're talking about blogs. But what's interesting is that that's digital consumption there. So just in academia, in my little tiny little corner of the world, that's using up all kinds of different data points and data sets describing what we're talking about. So it's so overwhelming. It's everywhere, increased use of data and all kinds of new data points coming in.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really a revolution in the way information processing can occur. And the collaboration happens very naturally because the data can be accessible in a secure way by lots of people, and they can bring their compute requirements to the data rather than shipping, you know, storage around the world and duplicating all that storage in a million locations.
Earlier we talked about DRCOOP and Hadoop and all these strange words. There are acronyms that are normally associated with cloud computing, like IaaS, SaaS, PaaS. I don't know who defines what, but there's one term that is well defined, and it's Gov Capital Cloud, and this is a trademark with AWS. Is that right?
We have a special region that we built specifically for public sector customers and for companies that support the public sector.
It's GovCloud.
So that's the GovCloud region. And it has some special controls, for example, ITAR compliance, so that it's a U.S. persons only region. And that gives some unique capabilities to people. They may not even have, you know, a lot of ITAR data that is export control data, but they can mix that in with their kind of normal usage, and they have that flexibility using the GovCloud.
Before the show, we were talking about a security conference in Baltimore a couple weeks back, and I just attended the first day. But these are questions that very serious people think about and try to consider. ITAR, I mean, there were some workshops at that conference that dealt at security in the cloud at a very, very high level. Mm-hmm. And I think what's interesting is that Amazon is sitting at the table leading a lot of these discussions on security and ITAR and a whole lot of different. We kind of touched on FISMA levels, but FISMA is really just kind of like the basics of some of this cloud security. But Amazon's right at the table, aren't they?
Absolutely. We're participating in these industry fora, and more importantly, our customers are leading the charge. They're seeing the value of this. You know, at the security conference, there were way more Amazon customers talking than I think I was the only Amazon speaker, and there was a dozen of our customers talking about how they use the cloud to not only provide secure infrastructure, but in some ways increase their security. For example, one of the very first controls in the CAG, which is one of the list of critical controls that some of the agencies developed, the first two or three controls are all about inventory. What do you actually have? What are your servers? What's on your servers and so forth? In the cloud environment, you literally call an API and you see every single resource that you have. You're paying for it, so you're going to see it, right? So we keep very careful track of the resources. And there's no like hidden servers under a desk somewhere or an unknown internet connection that some developer set up at some point in order to test something. All of the cloud infrastructure is under the control of a highly automated system. And so just very basic things in security are actually enhanced in a fully automated cloud environment.
I once worked for a technology officer, and he said they were doing an inventory of their servers in their building, and they saw this strange server. They didn't know where it was. Turns out it was built into a wall, and it was an NT server that was just sitting there chugging along, just happy as can be. Someone mistakenly put it in the wall temporarily and patched it up.
It's all too common.
It sounds like a government agency. No, this happens everywhere, you know, and people really don't know where the servers are. And we look at, you know, mobile phones, people having a hard time figuring out who's got what phone where. And so it's a whole different challenge. But mobile phones create data, which means increase in data sets. And how do you manage that? The problems are almost, you know, they're flowing. I don't know if it's a cloud environment or a wave environment where it's flowing over everything. The mobile impacts the cloud impacts security impact. What's the cheapest way I can use the cloud?
Yep.
And AWS has an offering called GovCloud that I think most of our listeners should at least consider or be open-minded to and go to the website and read some of the white papers. And I think read some of the success stories of other agencies that have had luck with this.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a lot of success stories. Many of them are public. Many more of them we haven't been able to make public yet. But believe me, there's a lot of great information out there, and we'd be happy to talk to you about the Amazon Cloud.
When we come back, we'll talk more about Tech America and their report on October 3rd dealing with big data, and talk more about elasticity and maybe social ways to learn more about what Amazon is doing in the cloud. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal Tech Talk. On Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're speaking with Mark Ryland, Public Sector Chief Solutions Architect, Amazon Web Services. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Mark Ryland, Public Sector Chief Solutions Architect, Amazon Web Services. Many of my listeners are going to hear this interview in the car or something. Some will listen online. Some people like to read blogs and maybe link to the interview that way. And so I write a blog, and you can find my blog. Just type in John Gilroy blog, and my blog pops up instantly. Are there blogs you read, or does Amazon have a blog that they like to encourage people to read?
You bet. We have our main blog is aws.typepad.com, and there you'll see everything from new service and feature product announcements to customer use cases and new studies, some things that customers are doing. So it's a good resource, and I would suggest people look at that.
You know, I live next door to a family that's got four young kids in grade school, so I'm kind of jealous because I can talk about cool things, and I can talk to little James about Mars and going to Mars. Wouldn't you like to go to Mars and go to the moon? And AWS has been involved with the Mars rover landing. I'm sure James next door would really think that's cool.
Yeah, absolutely. No, we've been really privileged to work very closely with NASA JPL for a number of years now. The Mars rover mission, which has been on Mars for, I think, about 6 years, a lot of the data that comes down from there, all the data is processed and stored in the Amazon cloud and distributed to scientists throughout the world using cloud computing with Amazon. But more recently, you probably saw the Curiosity landing. That was a major new effort that landed in August of this year. And it's like 10 times the size of the rover and much more challenging mission just to physically land it without damaging it. Was an incredible engineering accomplishment. It's atomic powered, so it will last a good long time with it, regardless of it doesn't need solar energy, and it's really a driving laboratory. It can actually do an internal analysis and transmit the lab results back to Earth. And that entire landing mission, all the video streaming and lots of the data analysis and analytics are running on the Amazon cloud.
Now, that's an example probably where the scientists could predict how much data they'd need and when, you know. But there are situations like I remember back on, September 11th, the Washington Post site, it blew up. It couldn't expect that many hits to come. It wasn't elastic enough.
That's right.
And here it is 12, 13 years later. Maybe we've learned lessons. And there could be organizations that look at the public health people. If something breaks out somewhere, they have to be able to respond to that quickly and adapt. Now, they're not going to buy 20 servers, have them sit them in a closet and not use them because they can't justify that. But what if they could have an elastic environment? Well, geez, if there's a West Nile virus outbreak, then we'd be able to respond to the press request for more information and not have people come to a site with a 404 error.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of people associate this high scale up and down with commercial, you know, web launches or the Super Bowl launch of a product. But actually, public sector has exactly the same kinds of requirements. We saw it with the, remember the Cash for Clunkers program where that was a way higher demand and the website fell over? We see this with our transportation customers. We have state transportation agencies that have websites that, you know, are accessed very seldom. But when there's a major issue with traffic or with a weather problem or a road outage or a bridge problem, suddenly the traffic will spike to, you know, 10 or 20, 100 times its normal level. And the same thing with disease outbreaks. And so public sector really can benefit from the ability to run sites that scale up and down depending on load and automatically do that. Let's be clear. It's not a someone sitting at a keyboard typing in, gee, how busy is it and so forth. No, the cloud technology allows you to do auto-scaling, to actually provision automatically based on load and then scale down when you're not using it. And so you get the best of both worlds. You pay for it when you need it. You don't pay for it when your site is quiet.
I will reluctantly admit that I've been at the DMV the last day of the month, and I've said, boy, these government people, they got to be inefficient. What? How crazy are they? It's so I'm waiting in line here. I'm running out of stuff to read, but who is the crazy one? It's probably me not to understand that, you know, they're not designed to handle, you know, the fire hose in the mouth. They're designed to maybe a drinking fountain, and why would you not be? And would I want to double my taxes in order them to handle that wide volume every day of the month? No, I don't want to pay for that.
Right.
I want to pay for just in time, just now, just when I need it. And that means elasticity. And I think that's one lesson we've learned just looking at the last 10, 15 years with the computer environment is that, you know, things are going to change. And there are organizations that may have to change quickly. Katrina organizations had to change quickly. Public health. I mean, if people don't understand that public health policy is going to have to change and requirements for understanding what's going on is going to, it's and who knows when the next outbreak is going to be of what? No one knows.
Absolutely. Yeah. And people have historically made up for this issue by over-provisioning. They buy more stuff than they think they need because they don't want to take a chance of not having enough gear, not having enough capacity or networking, what have you, at these critical moments. And so the result is a lot of waste. But if you can actually use and pay for your actual needs and track closely what the real loads are, it's going to be a win for the taxpayer, both costing less, but also providing better services at those critical moments.
A good example might be the Human Genome Project or the Thousand Genome Project. I mean, everyone understands, at least with a basic concept of mathematics and science, that this is really a lot of information. You can watch a PBS special and realize the amount of information that's contained in DNA. And another good application, maybe this is not an application of elastic demand, but maybe this is an application of just a volume of demand.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And one of the exciting things about this science, big data and science, is it's really changing the way science happens. And it's decreasing the cost and the time to science. Instead of spending a lot of time provisioning and building systems, you can start your analytics right away. And a really exciting development is something called the executable paper. So what happens is the scientist does a bunch of analysis. They use a lot of computing resources to do that. And then historically, they would publish a paper in a journal, and that would be it. Now they can actually store the execution environment, the code they wrote, the workflows, the data and analytics, and store those in the cloud. And the next scientist who comes along and wants to pick up and build on that research can actually rehydrate from storage an entire experimental environment sitting in a cloud. And they're, especially in bioinformatics, you're seeing an explosion of interest in this concept. And At the latest bioinformatics conference in Boston a few months ago, there was a number of speakers talking about this idea of the executable paper as like the next big thing in bioinformatics.
And I would think in the security community, they would like to see code like that too, where they can exactly see what happened and how it was changed and do it in an environment that is separate from other environments. But diagnosing code and looking at aggressive software is important. Mentioned earlier, October 3rd, Tech America, they had this big paper to talk about big data. One of the recommendations was suggestion that agencies have chief data officers. Now, isn't that something new? And the chief data officer can take a look at their environment and inventory and say, well, no, these three are good candidates for big data, and these three are not good candidates for the cloud, and these three, we're going to just have to take and unplug these. I mean, a chief data officer maybe can look at things more objectively than a chief information officer or a chief technologist who have their biases, but a chief data officer, maybe it'll slip in fresh, bang, this is what we need, this is what we don't need, and this is what can or can't go to the cloud.
Absolutely. We've tended to treat data in silos. So your accounting system was your accounting system, and your web system was your web system, and your ERP system was this, and your analysts did something else. If you look at data holistically, what you begin to see is the possibility of correlation and the benefits that come from correlating across these silos is really enormous. And that's where this kind of interdisciplinary concept of a data scientist and having a chief data officer, this is really a hot topic right now. And people are looking for ways to benefit from the data that's stored there. And right now we're not gaining benefits from some of this data.
And I don't know the skill set that's needed. It's got to be a people skill set. It's got to be a data engineering skill set. It's got to be a line of business skill set. Is that an MBA skill set? Is that an English major skill set? is it an attorney skill set? I mean, the skill set is unusual. I think the people with that skill set, it's hard.
It is. It's an outside the box thinker probably skill set as much as anything, and it's probably an interdisciplinary team. At our recent we had a summit, a public sector summit, a couple of weeks ago, and Tom Soderstrom, who's the CTO of NASA JPL, gave a really excellent presentation. I encourage people to find that on the web. And what he talked specifically about how they're hiring data scientists, and what they're looking for is truly an interdisciplinary team. Some people with IT backgrounds, some with computer science backgrounds, some with business backgrounds. And by building a team with all these disciplines, they can do things that have never been done before with data.
I've had Red Hat in the studio and talking with the gentleman afterwards. He said the last 10 developers they hired all had English majors. And I said, why is that? Well, because they have to give use cases and come up with stories from users in order to translate into applications. And well, an English major should be able to handle a story, I would think. But that's what it is. It's boiling down to communicating with end users to be able to interpret that information to make it actionable. So the skill sets are certainly changing and not necessarily all based on IT and TCP addresses and code. Yep. We'll have to take a quick break and come back. We talk more about Amazon Web Services, maybe give some more examples of how flexible and elastic services can assist in federal IT, some of their challenges and some of their goals for this year. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Mark Ryland, Public Sector Chief Solutions Architect, Amazon Web Services. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio we have Mark Ryland, Public Sector Chief Solutions Architect, Amazon Web Services, man of many, many talents, including technical talents and legal talents and all kinds of extemporaneous talents, as we just found out in the break. So it's kind of interesting having a conversation with him about Amazon Web Services and elasticity and the cloud. Many of my listeners go to blogs, get information on blogs. We talked about the blog. I think that's AWS
typepad.com.
So you can get information on blog there. Some of my listeners, you know, like to tweet and follow tweets. If you want to follow me, my handle is at Ray Gilray. And I think AWS has got a handle too. What's that one, Mark?
Our handle is at AWS Cloud.
Yeah, that's good.
And our hashtag is at AWS, or hashtag AWS.
Yeah, so you can follow those if you'd like. And I'm sure there's listeners just that targeted type information. I want to ask about the future of big data here, but before we go into that, this is my mandatory 10 questions I ask all my guests to find out if, in fact, you are a card-carrying nerd. So here we go. We'll find out, Mark. First question, what was the year you bought your first computer?
It was 1984.
84.
And I saw that famous Mac advertisement in the Super Bowl, and I was actually in law school and thinking about getting a computer, and I actually decided, you know what? As much as I thought the Mac was cool, it had only a dot matrix printer, and I wanted a Daisy Wheel printer, so I bought a K-Pro instead.
A K-Pro Daisy Wheel? Well, I haven't heard that phrase in 20 years of it, a Daisy Wheel
showing
printer.
My age.
Boy, I can remember all of those. Impact printers? My goodness. They used to have sound closures on because they're so loud.
Exactly.
You were your first cell phone, please.
Was a 2-pound luggable in 1992, let's say.
Well, that was respectable.
Yeah.
And what type of mobile phone do you have?
I use an iPhone.
An iPhone.
I'm fond of the Windows phone, too, but the ecosystem of apps kind of keeps me in the iPhone camp.
And how many apps do you have?
Oh, I probably have about 30 apps on my phone.
Okay, it's respectable. What kind of tablet device do you have?
I use a Kindle.
A Kindle. Mm-hmm.
Kindle HD 7-inch. It's really a sweet little machine.
And do you have any personal disaster recovery sites that you use for personal backup, online backup?
I use Amazon Web Services.
Oh, what a coincidence.
In fact, I'm migrating. I've run email servers and web servers at home. I have a fixed IP address from Cox Business Service, and I've been running data services at my home office for about 15 years, and I'm migrating all my infrastructure to the cloud.
You know, I asked everyone that question. It's like asking someone from Apple if they use an Apple phone. It's like, what do you know? Then I looked up and said, well, yeah, of course you're going to use it. Come on, let's get the program here. What social networking sites do you participate in?
Probably LinkedIn, probably is where I'm most active. Mm-hmm.
And the last book you read was electronic or paper?
Electronic.
Highly rated here, you know. One of my guests once remembered the serial number of his first Apple II. That was pretty impressive. But this is not bad. Early adopter. and an early cell phone. That's good to know. Well, I'll run these through my UNIVAC computer in my basement, and I'll print out something with an impact printer and mail it to you.
A nerd index?
A nerdometer is what we call it technically. Well, there's all kinds of heavy-duty topics here. We talk about medical issues and healthcare IT and big data, and there's serious things involved there. And certainly cloud and security brings up a lot of serious-type topics as well. But I think a lighter topic is what's going to happen here? I mean, we look at desktop computers, and you know, this is the first time in 13 years there's a decrease in sales of desktop computers.
Yeah, things are changing.
And we see a radical change in the environment here. And you've been around long enough to see changes and see what are just fads, what aren't fads. Well, what do you think what do you think Amazon's going to have the next few years? I don't know if Jeff Bezos could have predicted the move to Amazon Web Services back in the mid-90s when he started it. Where do you see the whole idea of cloud computing going, and where's Amazon going to head?
Well, you know, the term paradigm shift is an abused term and used too much, but I really see that, and that's why I came to Amazon, frankly, to be part of what I see as a huge shift in the way that people use computational and storage power. I mean, there's just a big sea change going on, and the question is how fast, you know, how quickly. But I don't think there's any question that we're going to move to this what we call utility computing model, where you sort of plug into the internet and you get the computing you need, and you unplug when you don't need it. It's just a big change. We often show the in our slideshow, sometimes we'll have the generators that companies used to have. Like we have a German brewery that had its own generator on site in the early 1900s, generating its electric power. And now everybody's on the grid. Does that mean you have no capability on premises? No, you might have a backup system, what have you. But in general, we plug into the grid for power. And I think going forward, we'll plug into the internet for our computation and storage capabilities.
And I think there are intelligence communities that may have variations on that, but there's still organizations that have their own power, like hospitals. So
sure,
there's organizations that you have to respect, you know, servers down the hall instead of servers down someone else's hall.
Yep.
It's funny, I was at a car dealership last night, and I waltzed in there, and I talked about miles per gallon, and he wanted to talk about smartphone interface. I mean, 5 years ago, it would have been miles per gallon, right?
That's right.
Now they're talking about, well, look at, you know, this has this interface for this and that, and we distinguish ourselves. And the differentiator had nothing to do with transmission or, I guess, would be cubic feet storage. It was, you know what, this is a lot easier with your smartphone. But this is just an example of what's happening with desktops and mobiles and smartphones. The technology is changing so quickly. 38% of Americans check their email before 8 o'clock in the morning. I guarantee you that's not with a desktop machine. It's with a smartphone creating all kinds of data. And I think it's forcing people to take a look at cloud and see where it's going to head. What about internationalization? And I'll ask the question that is kind of an awkward question. So who does, you know, Amazon Web Services compete with? I mean, Amazon.com competes with bookstores or competed with bookstores. Well, what does AWS compete with?
Well, primarily we compete with the old way of doing business. So, and there's, you know, IT and world and the data processing world is a huge, huge market. And there's, you know, a lot of great companies out there doing it in a traditional way. And we're providing a new way of doing things and giving people an alternative. So we're just the very beginning of a big sea change. And so really all the cloud players in a way are allies. We're all trying to convince people that this is the right change to make. And you know, at least for many of your workloads, you're going to be better off running those in the cloud. So I guess tradition is our competitor.
It's a nice fall day today, but there are people who will be listening to this interview when there's 2 feet of snow on the ground, or maybe next spring. And they may want to go and get more information. And you mentioned this AWS Public Sector Summit 2012. Mm-hmm. That's available online. In fact, the gentleman from NASA, his talk is available online too. How'd they find that?
Well, you can go to aws.amazon.com/gov, and that will take you to the summit website. And then from there, you'll find links to the slides and some of the videos of some of the keynotes and lots of information about public sector cloud computing with Amazon Web Services.
And the gentleman from NASA, his name is Soderstrom.
Tom Soderstrom. Yeah, one of our great customers, a real visionary. He's got an excellent talk about, he calls it, I think it's to infinity IT capitalized and beyond. And he really talks about this paradigm shift that we've been talking about with cloud capabilities as a fundamental change in the way that JPL is doing their work.
Does he use Buzz Lightyear as a prop?
I think he's got a lot of Star Trek images actually in there.
Yeah, it would probably work. I mean, especially in his field of endeavor.
Exactly. And, it's a natural.
Yeah, and we joke and kid about it, and the amount of volume of data that NASA have is incredible. We all know that. But look at people at Department of Energy. Yep. They have tons of data too. I mean, they're not sitting out there all alone with just a couple data points to worry about. Look at that and just evaluating different types of programs as far as energy consumption.
Absolutely. We're working with all the national labs of the Department of Energy, because although they have a huge amount of computing power with some of their supercomputers and HPC facilities, we also have HPC capabilities in the cloud with very high-speed networking between very powerful virtual machines. So we're able to take, you know, additional workloads, cloud bursting, it's called, where your on-premises clusters are just backed up. There's too many people waiting in line. You need that job done now. So you can offload that to the cloud. And so, Department of Energy is becoming an excellent customer for us.
HPC, of course, is high-performance computing.
Yep. Thank you. I'm sorry if I'm doing too many buzzwords here.
I think half my listeners understood and half didn't, but I have to talk to the people that are at my level. Just, you know, high-performance computing, traditionally dominated by IBM and Cray, and increasingly making a shift to the cloud, but a lot of competition in that world.
Yeah, there is. But there's also great opportunities there. We deployed a new high-performance computing cluster about a year ago with a lot of capabilities. And we actually, before we rolled it out to the world, we ran a famous benchmark, LINPAC, and we were rated as the 47th fastest supercomputer in the world. And you can rent that by the hour from Amazon, something that you would have to pay $20, $30 million for to buy and deploy on-premises.
Another concept that 20 years ago would have been, 10 years ago would have been inconceivable. And maybe in the last two or three years, it's just changed to be that way. AWS Public Sector Summit also has information on HPC, high-performance computing, well, doesn't it?
You bet. Yep. We had some talks there on that, and we had a bunch of good customer presentations as well, people talking about how they've taken advantage of the cloud.
So if there's snow on the ground, you've got your Google up, and you type in HPC, you stumble on this interview, you might get information for your agency to help evaluate everything from energy programs to nuclear programs.
And, if I can interject there, it's not just we talked a lot about JPL and this cool space, future things, but something so pragmatic and practical as the police force of your local community. We have a customer, Taser, that has built a really cool system. It's a video capture system. The police officer wears a video camera on an eyeglass, and they videotape their encounters with the public, both protecting the public, but probably more importantly, protecting the peace officers from false complaints about how they've been treating individuals. Problem is, they're generating tons of new video data, and so their customers came back to them and said, this is a great idea, but what do I do with all this video? And they went back a little bit to the drawing board, came back with a cloud-based solution, so now they have a complete end-to-end solution that includes the data analytics and storage in the Amazon cloud.
Transparency is good for everyone. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Mark Ryland, Public Sector Chief Solutions Architect, Amazon Web Services. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, John.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.